Reading are into the hat for the fourth round of the FA Cup as Mark Bowen's backup brigade. Now, that is a tongue twister if ever I've seen one. Twice they trailed against League One Blackpool at the weekend before earning a 2-2 draw to send the tie to a replay in a couple of weeks' time. We'll be finding out right here on the Tyler's Den podcast who we could face in the next round if we do make it through. Plus, we'll be discussing the January transfer window, answering your questions in the mailbag, and looking ahead to this coming weekend's game against Nottingham Forest. My name is Ollie Allen, your guest host for episode number 215 of the Tyler's Den podcast, stepping in for Mark, who is busy this week. And I am joined by editor of the Tyler's Den, Simeon Pickup. Sim, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to step into the breach, and it's certainly a jam-packed show today. I was doing the plan for the show last night, and it looked quite light, but sort of the news we've had today that I'm sure we'll get onto in due course, and with the cup draw as well. And we've got a jam-packed show ahead of us, I am sure. Before we go any further, I must say a big thank you to ZCZ Films. They're sponsoring this episode of the podcast. It really is very much appreciated, and a lovely New Year's treat for all of us here at TT. And of course, if you yourself are interested in sponsoring a future episode of the show, please do email us. That's thetylersdend@gmail.com. Do get in touch. Or, of course, if you want to make a regular monthly donation, or indeed a one-off donation, you can head over to our Patreon page and pledge however much you want to. Again, no obligation whatsoever, but, of course, any amount really is appreciated. And hopefully, of course, you do see the rewards sort of in the content that we continue to put out on the website, on the podcast, and on social media as well. With all of that out of the way, then, as I said, we've got a jam-packed show ahead of us, so let's get straight into it and with a recap of Reading 2, Blackpool 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Sim, Reading's first home game of 2020 was, of course, this FA Cup third round tie against League One Blackpool. Of course, the visitors went ahead in the first half. Nathan Delfonso heading home 1-0 at half time to the Tangerines. Reading then equalised to Sam Baldock in the second half before almost instantly Blackpool went back in front. Armand Nandwie had a very, very good game up front for Blackpool, certainly their danger man. He put them 2-1 up. Danny Loder then came off the bench to make it 2-2 with a delightful little flick. We'll talk more about him later on. Before, of course, that missed Panenka penalty from Nandwie, sort of the only thing he did wrong all afternoon. Where you mean if you're a League One player, you certainly don't want to be Panenkaing a penalty. And of course, it hit the crossbar and Reading cleared it and saw out the 2-2 draw. But as mentioned, Mark Byrne made 11 changes for this cup tie, sort of giving the players that have won four games in a row in the league a rest for this one. Was that the right decision in your eyes, Sim?
Yeah, absolutely. The focus very much has to be on the league at the minute. We are looking really impressive in the league. We've got a good bit of momentum all round. And there's no reason to do anything to upset that. And going up against a team like Blackpool, no disrespect to them, but it's still one where we can expect to make changes and still be competitive. So from that perspective, from the perspective of the league, it was absolutely fine. Team lineup, all those changes had no real problems with. But I did still think that with the strength that we did have on the pitch, and it was actually quite a strong team, if you look back at it, there was one debut, Andre Burley came in, Teddy Howe's pretty young as well, Michael Elise too. But generally speaking, apart from them, it was a pretty established, experienced side, particularly with people like Boye and Baldock inside. And the fact that we, I think... For me, it was a bit of a let-off for Reading that we had some really hairy moments in the second half where we could have lost it. Not just the penalty, but also a really smart save from Sam Walker from Nathan Delfonso pretty late on. Blackpool could very well have won that. And if we had done that, then I would have been pretty worried, to be quite honest. And as much as the league form has been impressive, it would have been a real shame to go out in a banana skin like that against Blackpool.
It looked very disjointed to me, I think. And I think that was probably perhaps to be expected. I think when you play a team of players who probably haven't played together very often, you know, a sort of mixture of youngsters, as you say, Burnley making his debut, Olise getting his first start of the season, and, you know, Teddy Howell not played very much at all either. So I think when you put those players in and combine them with players who have sort of been on the fringes, I think Jordan Abiyi is an experienced player by now, but he's still not played very many games this season. You know, the same for Gareth McCleary and Sam Baldock. You know, Lucas Boyer has been, you know, mainly limited to sort of games off the bench. So again, these players haven't been playing regularly together. So I think you can sort of expect that sort of disjointed approach. And I think Blackpool are a decent side to an extent. You know, I think they've had, you know, not the best league form of late, but they've certainly got some good players. You know, I mentioned Nnamdi there. I think he could certainly do a job in the Championship. I think, you know, obviously he was coming up against a very inexperienced centre-back in Andre Burley, but he looked a real handful. And you've got the likes of, you know, Delphonse, who scored as well, Jay Spearing, Ben Hennigan, who, of course, Reading were linked with in the summer. So they're not a bad side, that Blackpool team at all. And certainly, I think you look at the team that Reading put out, we'll look at it a little bit now, certainly where the youth was sort of perhaps personified the most was in defence. You saw, as we say, Teddy Howe at right-back, Omar Richards at left-back, both of those players, 21 years old, Andre Burley making his debut, age 20 in the middle. And then Matt Miazga was that sort of experienced option alongside them. He was picked as captain. What was your take on that defence in? Because I always think that if you're going to put youth somewhere, it probably shouldn't be the defence, because I think you saw against Nnamdi, I think, you know, Andre Burley had an absolutely terrible time. And I hate to be critical of a player, sort of, as you say, you know, very young, making his debut, you know, not played first team football before, but he will be having nightmares about that game, I think, for a long, long time.
Yeah, it was bold from Bowen, absolutely. It's but to be honest, there wasn't really much else he could do. When you got year on out and you're having to rest people like Moore and Morrison, and obviously Jordan Abiyi is playing higher up the pitch, he had to play a pretty young defence. And it's good to have Matt Miazga there and in there as an experienced option alongside Burley. But when you're making such wholesale changes, you are going to have a lot of youth there. But I guess with Burley, it's one of those afternoons where obviously it's very disappointing. It's a really rough afternoon, but it's the kind of game that can spur him on to better things. He will have learnt a lot from that. He will have learnt just how much a striker can punish you if you're that little bit behind them or that little bit weaker than them. And he will learn from that. And that's ultimately more important than one performance. He needs to learn from it. He needs to take the lessons from it. And if he does, there's absolutely no problems with it. The same with Teddy Howe as well, giving away a soft penalty. I don't know if it actually was a deserved penalty or not, but again, it's the kind of thing that he's going to learn from. And by putting young players in the firing line like this, you do see if they're ready for first team football or not. And credit to Bowen for doing it. And hopefully we'll see much brighter performances from him in the future.
Graduate number 54, Andre Burley was from the academy, which again, it's just a fantastic stat. And then we saw Romani Medford-Smith come off the bench to make it number 55 as well, late on in the second half. And look, as you say, it's a chance for them to experience, you know, first team football against these, you know, better sort of stronger players. And certainly, you know, with, you know, give him a couple of loans and hopefully he'll be ready for the first team, because, you know, Reading does have this fantastic tradition of bringing academy players through. And obviously, you know, it'd be great. We've got the likes of Liam Moore and Matt Miazga and Michael Morrison, you know, right now. And obviously Tom McIntyre coming through as well. But, you know, Morrison's, I think, you know, 30, 31, so he'll only be here for a couple of years. So certainly, you know, this tradition that Reading have of producing good young players and defenders as well should hopefully continue. You mentioned it there, Sam, a little bit. Jordan Abiyi, he played higher up the pitch, obviously, you know, traditionally a left back. But certainly when he was first coming in to the first team, or certainly in his academy days, he played an awful lot up the pitch, and, you know, obviously wears number 11, perhaps indicative of, you know, maybe his desire to sort of play on the wing or in midfield. And he got that wish at the weekend, playing higher up. And I actually thought he had a really, really good game. He probably was one of Reading's, you know, most creative attacking threats. You know, he had a couple of shots in the first half, probably faded a little bit towards the end of the second half, probably ran out of gas. So, you know, he's not really played that many games since coming back from injury. So, you know, maybe ran out of energy a little bit, but do you think there's scope perhaps for him to be, you know, play that role more often? Because, you know, we'll talk about left backs a little bit later on when we come on to sort of Tyler Blackett and whatnot. But, you know, Blackett's been playing fantastically in the last couple of games, you know, got, you know, a few assists against Fulham and against Preston as well. And obviously Omar Richards, I thought, also had a pretty good game on Saturday and has largely impressed me this season whenever he's played. And, you know, you don't really want three sort of, you know, three good choices at left back. Probably the solution to that is, you know, do you either sell one of them, or could we see Jordan Ibiza perhaps start playing a little bit higher up?
It's certainly possible, but I wasn't. As you say, I did think he had some bright moments on Saturday. He had some good efforts on goal, particularly in the first half. But it struck me more as a wider idea from Bowen to try and rejig things tactically and have another look at it. Reading in the last couple of weeks have played quite a narrow 4-2-3-1, I would say, with Ejiri and Mate both kind of coming in from the wings. Whereas on Saturday, we had Ibiza and McCleary both playing quite high and wide, giving a lot of width and trying to stretch the play. And although naturally you can have someone like Ibiza there as a very out-and-out orthodox left-wing option, in the same way with McCleary on the right wing, and he could be useful for that going forward on Saturday, on the basis of Saturday, I didn't see enough, to be honest. Yes, he had a few efforts at goal, and he could have scored with one in the first half. It was pretty close from, I think, a Sam Baldock cross. But on the whole, I thought the system was too spread out, basically, in the final third. The wingers were too far apart from Lucas Boyer as a number 10. Sam Baldock was too isolated, and although there may be some potential for Ibiza to play as a winger in future, I'd like to see it happen differently, basically, going on in the future. Maybe see him cutting in that bit more, allowing Richards or Blackett, whoever's behind him, to overlap. And we do have fullbacks who can do that, both on the left with Richards, who's very attacking, and Blackett, who's obviously got a couple of assists recently. But also on the right with Gunter overlapping, Yeardom overlapping, Howe doing it. So, yeah, there's potential for Ibiza to do it, but just do it a little bit differently.
Yeah. Again, I think it comes down to sort of familiarity sort of thing. I think, one, you know, maybe if Ibiza plays a few more games, he might, you know, be a bit more comfortable in that role, and Bowen might change it around a little bit. I think you're certainly seeing at the moment in sort of the team we're playing in the league that Bowen's made very few changes in this run of sort of four wins in a row that we're making. And that, I think, has really been you know, positive for Reading, and sort of this team has got to know each other. You know, we spoke a little bit, you know, sort of perhaps Gomez's downfall earlier in the season was that he sort of brought his team together a bit too late. We had that splurge, you know, quite late on in the transfer window, and it took a while for the team to gel. And I think you're seeing now that Mark Bowen's bringing, you know, this group of players together, playing, you know, this starting 11 quite regularly. And I think, you know, as I say, this team that we saw on Saturday hadn't played together very often. Jordan Ibiza is still, you know, coming off the back of a 2-year-long injury and still not played very many games. So, you know, I've still got high hopes for Jordan Ibiza. I think, as we say, you know, we've got a very, very good choice of left-backs at the moment with Blackett, with Richards and Ibiza. And I think it'd be sad, rude to see any one of those three go. And, you know, we'll speak about Blackett later on because his contract's up at the end of this season. You know, there's been some rumours about him potentially moving away this month. But I think it would be a shame to see any one of those three go, because I think they all bring something different to the side. They all offer you something different at left back. So we'll have to wait and see how that one pans out. In midfield, Michael Olise and Andy Winnemotta, two academy players, they played in central midfield with, as you say, Gareth McCleary out on the right. And for me, those three players were actually quite disappointing. I thought it was a chance perhaps for Winnemotta and for Gareth McCleary to, you know, stake a claim to play in the first team more regularly. And perhaps didn't quite do it. You know, we'll mention actually them a little bit later on. We've had a few questions on both McCleary and Winnemotta in the mailbag. So we'll leave that discussion for a couple of minutes later. Michael Olise, again, it's very tricky. Obviously, he's still only 18 years old, and it's very easy to forget that because he played a few games last season as well. And it's clearly a very, you know, good prospect for the future. But I thought he didn't do the basics right for me, I think, on Saturday at least. I think he shows some good touches. You know, he's definitely got quality. I think in that side, I think against an experienced side like Blackpool, he just sort of needed to do the basics right, I think.
Yeah, I thought he was wasted, though, to be quite honest. It was he seemed to kind of essentially come into the Charlie Adam role, essentially. You got one holding player there, in this case, Andy Winnemotta, rather than Pele. And then we've tended to have more of a passer next to them, a bit more of a kind of a deep-lying creative midfielder, essentially. And on Saturday, it was Michael Olise, but for me, that's not his strength. You need him higher up the pitch where he can get into those pockets of space, turn and run at the opposition. He likes that kind of much more proactive role where he can get on the ball and really try and make things happen in the final third, I think. We saw that on the last day of last season against Birmingham when he was, from memory, played as a winger in a 4-3-3, and he looked really bright, he looked really direct and positive. But when you play him in that deeper line role, yes, he's got the technical ability to play passes, to do the basics right, as you say, and keep the ball well, but he's not going to be quite as effective. And when Reading were struggling to break down Blackpool on Saturday, I do think we needed that bit of guile, that little bit of ingenuity that someone like Elise offers higher up the pitch. And again, we've got someone like Ryan East on the bench who could have come on and played that deeper line role. So again, it's one of those that I'm a little bit disappointed in from Bowen, that he didn't rejig things tactically. And to be quite honest, you can't really properly judge a young player, someone like Elise, if you're playing him out of position, if you're not playing him in the right role. And yes, there are positives from him from Saturday, but you need to see a better tactical approach from the manager to really properly judge him.
Yeah, I think Elise is probably naturally more of a wide player, and I think that's probably where his future will lie, certainly in this Reading team. And you know, as you say, we saw him play out wide towards the end of last season, and he did quite well there. So I think for me, naturally, he's probably more of a wide player than he is in the middle. Up front, Sam Baldock, I thought, was probably Reading's man of the match against Blackpool. I thought he played really, really well. I thought he led the line superbly. I thought, you know, obviously one of the more experienced players in that team, made a couple of really nice runs in the first half. It didn't quite pay off for him, but in the second half, you saw, you know, we mentioned Michael Elise again. Elise played a fantastic through ball, and Baldock took his goal really, really well. Perhaps the keeper could have done a little bit better, but it was a really well taken goal from Sam Baldock, and perhaps surprisingly came off a few minutes later for Danny Loader. But that was perhaps a sign for Mark Byrne that he wanted to maybe give Sam Baldock a little bit of a breather ahead of next weekend if he's going to play him then. And I think that would certainly be in my mind if I was Mark Byrne, because Sam Baldock certainly staked the claim. You know, he's been out injured for the last few games, but come back into the side and done really, really well. And for me, Sim, I think Baldock was probably one of the few players out of that 11 that started on Saturday that sort of, you know, did really stake a claim that they should be playing more regularly.
Players like Baldock are worth their weight in gold, to be quite honest. Someone who will reliably, dependably, every week, every game, run their socks off, really run the channels, really try and make things happen. And when you've got someone like that in your team, you are gonna stand a chance. And he took his goal really well. I don't think it was just that, though. It wasn't just his attacking side, but he also ran the channels really well. He worked really hard, and he did well out of it, to be quite honest. And you compare him to someone like Lucas Boyer, I think, who is technically a lot better than Baldock. I think he's probably a bit more of a flashy, showy player in that sense, rather than Baldock. But he didn't put himself about enough. He didn't work hard enough. And at the end of the day, a lot of it is just about doing that. It's about doing the basics and doing them well, doing them repetitively. And that's the kind of thing that impresses the manager and hopefully is going to be in contention in the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't have him as a starter at the minute, because this kind of 4-2-3-1 that we have typically with Zhao up top in the last couple of weeks, perhaps with Puskas when he comes back from injury, I wouldn't shoehorn Baldock in, either kind of changing formation or maybe putting him out wide in a 4-2-3-1. It wouldn't suit him. So he's going to have to properly wait to have his chance. But when he does, you can rely on him, you can depend on him. And that's massively to his credit.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't change sort of the starting 11 from the side we're playing in the league. I think, you know, you don't change a winning team, especially a team that's won four in a row and has just won away at Preston and Fulham. But I think there is potentially scope for Sam Baldock. And I think, but one thing that Saturday probably did tell me is that there's a reason why that, you know, the first team is the first team, and that you know, this backup team is the backup team, because really, as I say, apart from Sam Baldock, you know, maybe Omar Richards and Jordan Beata to an extent, none of them really showed me why they should be in this first team. Danny Lodi came on for Sam Baldock, as I say, and scored, you know, what was, you know, very well taken goal, a nice little flick, sort of back heel into the back of the net that sort of trickled in off the post. There's been a lot of discussion about Danny Loader in recent weeks, of course. out of contract in the summer, still not signed a new deal. Plenty of sort of rumour and hype around him. And, you know, there were sort of rumours on Twitter and on social media the last couple of weeks about him potentially wanting to leave the club. He came out and said that was categorically not true. Again, whether you want to believe him for that or whether you want to say that he's trying to just sort of quash those rumours, who knows? But is Daniel Oda sort of a player that we should be trying to keep this month, or is it a chance, you know, obviously, he's had a contract in the summer, that there's a chance he'll go for free then. Is it a chance for us to offload him this month, or is he worth keeping around?
You can only kind of give him faith for so long, to be quite honest. He's actually had a couple of seasons now. I know he hasn't really been playing regularly, but he made his debut, I think, under Yap Stam back in 2017. So he's actually been on the cards for a little while now. And besides a really good goal against Middlesbrough and a really good goal on Saturday as well, he's not really done that much to impress us, to be quite honest. And yes, he may have a lot of talent. He may be someone with a bright future in the game. But if he's not showing that here, if he's not really properly taking the opportunities he's given with both hands and showing the manager what he can do, I wouldn't really want to be keeping him, to be quite honest. And yes, he scored a really good goal on Saturday, but apart from that, in his all-round display, I didn't see someone who was really bursting at the seams to try and impress the manager and break into the first team. He's capable of those moments, but it's not just that. It's about properly being consistent. He kind of reminds me a little bit of how Robson Kanu, actually, who was also a very talented player, but didn't really seem to do it regularly enough, didn't really properly have that dependability and that consistency that you want from someone. And in Loder's case, yes, he may be able to get a move to a big club, whether in the Premier League or abroad. He's got that talent, he's got that ability to get there. But from Reading's point of view, we can't just hope that he's going to come good here. And at this stage, it's just about basically just getting the best financial deal, essentially, whether that's selling him this transfer window or waiting into the summer and perhaps getting a decent compensation agreement from another club. I don't know how specifically that would work, but whatever's best for us financially, we've got to take it at the minute.
I'm probably in the minority when I sort of say that I feel a bit sorry for Daniel Oda, really, because I think he's still only 19 years old and he's almost a victim of the hype that was generated around him to an extent, and hype that obviously he created himself by sort of, you know, doing very well with the 23s and obviously, you know, he scored 4 goals in one game that pre-season against QPR, you know, when he was still just 16 years old and sort of came into the side at a point last season where Reading were struggling for goals under Paul Clement. You know, he was chucked in at the deep end, really, and look, I think obviously, you know, I think a lot of fans were calling for that, and obviously when that happens you almost expect him to sort of hit the ground running straight away, and when he doesn't do that you become frustrated with him, which is obviously understandable. But I think it happens so often with sort of these young players now that this hype is built up around them with people not really seeing an awful lot of them. You know, they sort of see highlights on YouTube, you know, they sort of see comments on social media, but we don't really get to see these players until they're playing in the first team. And someone like Daniel Oda's got, as you say, an awful lot of quality, but it's just not worked out for him. Obviously, in the summer, he came very, very close to moving to Wolves. I think, you know, by all reports, he got up to the training ground, you know, almost agreed personal terms, really, sort of possibly even sort of met his new teammates. But then Reading pulled the plug on the deal at the last minute. And I don't think you can underestimate sort of how that can affect him, because, as I say, only 19 years old, and you know, you've got this big move to the Premier League, and suddenly it's pulled from underneath. And again, you know, you could say he's a professional, get on with it. But as I say, you know, a young lad who's not really asked for this hype, you know, he might well enjoy it, but you know, he's not really asked for it at all. Look, he might come good in 2-3 years' time. I think I would probably, as much as I feel sorry for him, I think it's probably best for his career that he probably gets a fresh start. I think he will be a Premier League player one day. I do genuinely believe that, because I do think he's got quality. I just think sadly Reading's probably not, you know, with what's gone on the last couple of years, and as I say, it's moved to Wolves nearly happening in the summer, Reading perhaps isn't the best environment to get the best out of him. But I do think he's a very, very good player, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does make it in a Premier League one day. One other player, of course, who might be sticking around, might be going, is Sonny Aluko, who came off the bench, for his first appearance for Reading in nearly a year, I think, obviously, coming back from his loan spell from Beijing Ren. Played all right, I think. I thought he grew into the game. I thought if he had that one shot, I think straight at the goalkeeper, he showed flashes, but again, not someone for me who I probably want to see playing regularly soon. But does Aluko have a future at Reading for you?
I think he has to. Basically, Reading have a very expensive asset on their hands for the next 18 months. He's not someone who we can easily get rid of in the near term. Hasn't had a lot of game time. I think he's not played since July for Beijing. So he's not someone that we're going to quite easily kind of loan out or release with another club kind of hungry to bring a player like that in. We're going to have to make the most of him, to be quite honest with you, whether that's getting him up to fitness, giving him a couple of games this season with the view to moving him on in the summer, or properly, fully bring him back into the team so that he can show us what we know he's capable of, is yet to be seen. I'd like to see him actually properly brought back into the team and incorporated. We've seen what Mark Bowen can do for the confidence of people like Chris Gunter, Sam Baldock, McCleary as well, who all cut adrift to varying degrees. If he can do the same with Sonny Aluko, if he can do a decent job there, then we've got a good talent on our hands, basically. He's someone who can play across that kind of attacking three we have at the minute, can fill in as a striker if we really need him to. And he's a good option to have, and particularly when you compare him against people like, say, Gareth McCleary and Lucas Boyer that we have at the minute. Neither of them have properly impressed for me in the last couple of weeks, particularly Boyer, who didn't do particularly well on Saturday, but hasn't really staked a claim in the last couple of weeks, or indeed all season, really, since joining on loan. If we got someone like Aluko coming in and he really shows the desire to put his past Reading form behind him, then he could quite easily go quite high up that pecking order, basically, and that's only a good thing.
Again, on Aluko, I just find it incredible that he's still got 18 months on his contract, and the fact that Reading signed him on a 4-year deal, when he was sort of 28, 29, for £7.5 million, it just seems crazy for that figure. Of course, Reading will play that replay against Blackpool on the 14th of January, next Tuesday, that is. We've had a couple of questions on this in the mailbag, Sim. Sort of, do you play that same team again for the replay? You know, we sort of talked about how Mark Byrne made those changes to sort of keep this side in the league that's been winning games, fresh to an extent. Would you keep that same team again?
Whether it's exactly the same team or not, I'd still keep broadly the same team, basically. The same principle of making broad changes. You might have someone like Sonny Aluko coming in to start if he's fit enough. I think there's talk about Tom McIntyre maybe coming back from injury in the near term. Could be a game for George Puskas to get a game to get some minutes in as he comes back from injury. But broadly speaking, I would want wide scale changes again. And if we do go up there and lose, it's not the end of the world. To be quite honest, again, the focus has to be on the league and whatever we can do to keep the momentum going in that sense, then we have to do it.
Well, of course, if Reading win that FA Cup third round replay against Blackpool on next Tuesday, we'll make it through to the fourth round of the Cup. And we are watching now live the fourth round draw. Obviously, of course, I'm sure whilst you're listening to this, you'll know who Reading could be facing in the fourth round. But to say myself and Sim are reacting to this live. The draw is going to start in a couple of minutes. I'm not going to subject you to sort of the whole waiting around because Reading might well be the last team to be drawn out of the Cup. So you will rejoin us just as Reading are being drawn out of the pot. Here we go then. Reading are ball number 20 in this draw. So let's see who we are going to get, or could get, of course, if we beat Blackpool. No Gibbons. There we are, the number 20. Reading are out of the pot. Reading or Blackpool, number 20, and they will face Number 8, Cardiff or Carlisle, so potentially an all-championship tie, or of course potentially another lower league team coming to the Maliski Stadium, but a home tie for Reading if they can get past Blackpool in this replay. Not a Premier League glamour tie sim, but a potential chance that Reading could get through, of course, if they beat Blackpool.
Yeah, another very winnable tie, no disrespect to Cardiff or Carlisle. Obviously, Cardiff were already beaten at the Maliski this season, so hopefully that can inspire another victory if we get past Blackpool and if we face Cardiff. But again, if we end up playing Carlisle, it's another one of those where hopefully we can give maybe another couple of debuts, give fringe players a run out as well. And it's hopefully one we're going to look back at with the league form continuing apace. Hopefully it's one that we can look at again as an opportunity to keep that momentum going. And although I personally would have preferred a big Premier League club at home, a Chelsea or a Spurs, for example, to get a really big crowd in under the Mad Sad lights, maybe on the TV, really big occasion. It's a very winnable tie. No disrespect to Cardiff or Carlisle, and hopefully we can go on a bit of a cup run.
Of course, we play Cardiff in the league on the 31st of January. So potentially if we get through and if Cardiff gets through two games in a row against the Bluebirds, and perhaps selfishly from my point of view, I'm at university in Cardiff. So from my point of view, it'd be nice if we could potentially draw against, if we could get through against Blackpool, if Cardiff could get through, draw at the Mad Stad and then get a replay back in South Wales. But that is purely from selfish point of view. Let's move on then. Cup draw done. I hope you enjoyed that. As I say, I'm sure you knew the result already, but seeing our reactions live. But let's move on then to the mailbag.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Mailbag time then, but just one thing that Sim actually just mentioned to me off air, just to be finished that segment there on the cup draw, is that potentially, of course, we could get a rearranged midweek away game in Carlisle, which is about as far north as you can go in the Football League. So hopefully that doesn't happen, because that would quite frankly be terrible for Reading in the FA Cup. But let's move on to the mailbag then. And the first question comes from Jordan Cottle. He says, how would you feel if we exited this transfer window with no one in but no one out, just having the same squad as right now? And of course, as you say, the transfer window is now open. January has begun. Sim, how would you feel sort of if the squad stayed as it was come the end of the month?
Be a repeat of the 2014 January transfer window, of course, when yes. We didn't have any money to bring anyone in and just about managed to keep hold of Adam Lafondre when it looked very much like we'd struggle to do so. I wouldn't be unhappy, to be quite honest. I wouldn't be too disappointed. We've got the makings of a good side at the minute. We've got good depth across the squad, as shown against Blackpool, to be quite honest. The fact that we can afford to give out a debut to Andre Burley, we can bring in a few young players, but generally speaking, have the strength and depth to play a very competitive side. And that's a big credit to the strength and depth we have at the minute. And because of that, there's no obvious part of the squad that I think we should strengthen. Perhaps if I were to be pushed on that, maybe we could use another central midfielder. I think if we lose someone like, well, basically any of the first team players, basically, I think we lose a bit of quality. We lose that that real impact in the first team that we really missed a couple of weeks ago when Swift and Ajaria were out of the side. And maybe planning for any potential future absence from them would involve bringing in some kind of cover, some kind of attacking midfielder or winger or deep line playmaker. But apart from that, I think we're generally fine. On the whole, though, probably more weighted towards getting players off the books. Manone, Aluko, if possible, unlikely. Josh Barrett looks like he's leaving as well at the time of speaking. We'll probably talk a bit more about him later. But on the whole, if we stay exactly the same, I wouldn't be too disappointed.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously it's easy to say that, you know, off the back of four straight wins, you know, you don't want to change the side at all. But I think, as you mentioned, you know, we saw when when Reading were without John Swift and were without Ovie Ejaria, that we had sort of struggled in that midfield. And I don't think you can expect Charlie Adam to play every game from now until the end of the season. And, you know, I think Pele's bone hot and cold, obviously, you know, done very well in recent weeks. Hopefully he can keep that up. Brendan Motta could come back in, as we say. It was a little bit disappointing on Saturday. But yeah, I would agree that if we were to strengthen one area, it would be in midfield. And that leads us nicely on to our next question, which comes from Paulo. He says, as the 4-1-4-1, such as the 4-2-3-1 is working well at the moment, Baker, as in Lewis Baker, instead of Adam in that midfield would excite me a lot. Odd that some people are dismissing re-signing him. Thoughts? And yeah, obviously, you know, Lewis Baker, obviously set to be recalled from his loan at Fortuna Dusseldorf back at Chelsea. A very, very popular player here last season and obviously had a great impact. And he'd definitely be someone that I would be looking at if we were to try and strengthen in that midfield. Lewis Baker would certainly be someone I think he could probably play that Charlie Adam role quite well. Sim, you know, thoughts on possibly bringing Baker back in?
Yeah, I mostly agree. Admittedly, I did a piece for the Woking paper a couple of weeks ago where I basically sounded a bit of caution about bringing him back. Yes, he's a very good player. He'd fit us in really well. But you need to be really careful about whether or not we can afford him, because obviously he'd be on presumably quite high wages, but also how specifically do you fit him into this side? Because he's someone who's going to come in and he's going to really want to be first team, quite understandably. At the moment, how does he fit in? Is he an alternative for Charlie Adam? Is he someone we maybe want to try and push further forward? Whatever way you do it, there's no clear way of doing it at the minute. Someone's going to lose out, and it could very well be that it wouldn't be a problem, but it's something we need to properly consider before we actually sign him, because if you bring him in and he doesn't properly fit in, then it could very well end up being a disappointing signing. But if the option's there, then certainly explore it.
I mean, I think obviously, you know, bringing someone in who knows a bit about the club, you know, obviously he was only here for 6 months or so, but, you know, seemed to fit in really well when he was here, you know, always seemed to give us all, you know, some of the pictures of, you know, celebrations after games. I think I remember that Wigan game quite vividly. He was very, very passionate in celebrations there. So it's, you know, I think clearly seemed to sort of care a lot for the club when he was here. You know, that might just be putting on a show or whatever, but he seemed to care quite a lot, and that always goes down well with fans. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't be against bringing Lewis Baker back. Greg Bannon says, given Tyler Blackett's recent resurgence, what do you think the pecking order of left back is at the moment? It's hard to ignore his form. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier in the show that we've got three very good options at left back at the moment. And Tyler Blackett has obviously done very well in recent weeks, you know, got a couple of assists, as we mentioned. Is out of contract in the summer, as we say, you know, so potential for him to move on. Then, as I say, I would be against losing any one of our three left backs. But at the moment, I would put Tyler Blackett as number one choice. Sim, it's very difficult sort of at the moment to dislodge him.
Yeah, on the basis of form, he's our number one at the minute. He's looked very good all round, basically. I think Bowen explained a couple of weeks ago that he brought him in initially to kind of solidify Reading a little bit, give us a bit more kind of a physical presence at the back, and certainly that helps us shore up defensively, as shown by a number of clean sheets in a row. But his attacking side has come on really well too. The fact that he's bombing up and down that left flank, he's getting in behind and bringing those pullbacks for John Swift against Preston and Fulham. And obviously he was instrumental in that Lucas Schell goal at Deepdale as well. He's really got a couple of sides to his game now. And considering that I used to, my big worry with Tyler Blackett basically was his lack of attacking mobility, that he can't get up that left side quickly enough and really stretch teams. But he's proven me wrong in the last couple of weeks, to be honest. He's looked dangerous bombing up and down. Whether or not he can continue that in the next couple of weeks when we're playing a few more games at home, when we're more likely to have to break teams down from having a lot of the ball ourselves, rather than giving him the chance to counter and have that bit more space to run into when he gets forward. How he adapts to that is going to be really interesting to see, and it could very well be that he doesn't quite take to that quite as well, and we might end up seeing Omar Richards back in the team, who's been impressive himself, to be fair. He's a bit more of an obviously quick, direct option to have there. And I wouldn't rule out him getting back into the side, or of course, Jordan Obita getting into the side at some point in the near future.
Someone else who's out of contract in the summer is Gareth McCleary. Of course, we've got a question on him as well. Scotland meets England, interesting Twitter name, says, why do so many Reading fans give Gareth McCleary such a hard time? There was a large number of fans getting on his back at the Blackpool game, none of whom gave him credit for setting up the second goal. I would agree to an extent. I think McCleary had a decent enough game against Blackpool. I thought he was, for large parts, he was disappointing. He did get a good assist for Danny Lode. It was a clever little pass, but he made a few, you know, decent passes throughout the game as well. But I think for me, with Gareth McCleary, it's very difficult because he's clearly not the player he was. He's lost a lot of his pace. I'm not sure he himself probably realises that, to be honest. I think he tried a few things on Saturday that he probably could have done maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but certainly can't do now. He's lost that pace. And it's just the decision-making as well. You know, sometimes he doesn't make the right pass, or doesn't make the right run. It's quite frustrating to watch. You know, there's glimpses there, and I think, you know, we know what McCleary can do. You know, we've seen, you know, him probably at his best form of his career at Reading, but as a player now, I think, sadly, he's not the player he was.
Yeah, and I think when you're a player who's obviously done really well a couple of years ago, he had that terrific 2013-14 season. When you're kind of on the way down from that, and in truth, he's been on the way down for that for quite a while, had a good first half for the 2016-17 season, obviously. But when you're that kind of player, I think fans get that little bit more frustrated, that little bit more quickly. They look at a player like McCleary, same with Gunter as well, who aren't first team regulars necessarily. Obviously, Gunter's come in for Yeardon recently, but generally speaking, they're not some of our best players. They're going to be on quite a lot of money. And I think fans are looking forward to the wages that are being invested in them at the minute being put elsewhere, basically. And they get frustrated when they see players who used to be good essentially taking up that spot. Obviously, it's not something that McCleary and Gunter can do much about. At the end of the day, they're fulfilling their contracts, and you wouldn't really blame them if they didn't put any effort in at the minute, having been discarded earlier on in the season and derided by a lot of fans as well. But to their credit, they're decent options. They care about the club, hard working, I think good, honest pros. You can expect a bit from them, but obviously not a huge amount. And when you have players like that, perhaps understandable that some of the more irritable fans in Reading's fan base, particularly on Twitter, get a little bit angsty about it.
I would be surprised if McCleary was here this time next year. I think I'd imagine he'll probably move on when his contract comes to an end in the summer. Sam Richards says, what's happened to Brennan Motta? Still a good player, but he's lost those driving runs through the midfield, taking out 3 or 4 opposition players, maybe trying to improve his passing and technical ability. Has that had an effect on what he does best? I'd agree with that for sure. I think, as I said, I thought he was quite disappointing on Saturday. I thought it was a chance for him to show what he was about. I thought it was a chance for him to try and, you know, potentially reclaim his place in the side, and didn't really do an awful lot. He seemed quite ineffective. You know, he didn't see an awful lot of the ball. Some of his passing was a little bit off. You know, as Sam says, his driving runs, you know, that we got so used to seeing last season. And I said last season that he was almost a perfect replacement for Danny Williams with those driving runs with the Motta, but we've not seen, you know, too much of him doing that this season, and it is sad to see. Obviously, you know, still a young player. But Sim, thoughts on Brennan Motta? You know, obviously, Pele's done very well in that role recently. How does Brennan Motta get back into the side?
I think really it's a tactical issue. I said earlier that you can't really judge players properly when they're not played in their best position, and for me, that's the same with Brennan Motta. You mentioned Danny Williams a minute ago there. Again, Williams and Brennan Motta are both kind of box-to-box players. They're a little bit more attacking. They're not out-and-out defensive players in the same way that you'd expect from, say, Pele, who's going to sit in front of the back four or a back three and try and break up the play and do the simple passing from there. Brennan Motta is the kind of guy who wants to have that space in front of him, drive up the pitch with the ball and make things happen higher up the pitch. And we saw a lot better form from him last season when he was playing in that kind of role, particularly at the end of the season when he had Baker behind him, Rinomoto was typically kind of a bit more advanced upper midfield three with Ajaru in there as well. And when you take him out of that role, when you give him more defensive responsibility and obviously exposes passing that little bit more, where he's going to have more time on the ball to potentially pick out someone higher up, which he's not quite as good at, he's not going to look as effective. In some games, when it's just about kind of charging about, closing down the opposition and winning the ball back, he's going to look that bit better. But particularly when Reading are looking for someone who can really give balance to the side and use the ball effectively, that's not really Rinomoto's game, to be quite honest. And although I'm frustrated with how he hasn't really kicked on since last season, it's understandable as well.
Finally then, Steve Sawyers says, if we cancel out the Medeski, why not give the tickets away to the local area on match days? Pretty sure they can stomach a profit from people buying drinks and food. Yes, it's not a huge amount, but it still gets people inside the stadium, and that can only be a good thing. I mean, obviously, the attendance was lower than normal, as to be expected on Saturday against Blackpool. I mean, not massively. I think the Cardiff game, for example, had about 5,000 fans there. So Reading certainly aren't at that level yet. But yeah, it's not a bad idea. I think, you know, you want as good an atmosphere as possible. I think, you know, without being... without being derogatory towards sort of the sort of people you might give tickets to, you know, sort of, you know, school children and whatnot, they're not necessarily going to generate a massive atmosphere in terms of, you know, what Club 1871 can do. But same thoughts on sort of giving back more towards the local community?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea in principle. Obviously, the club wants to be connected with the local community and really be seen to be helping out other people, whether it's school children or anyone else. It's a good initiative to do. But then again, on the flip side, if you're constantly giving out a lot of free tickets, season ticket holders are going to be thinking, hang on, I paid a lot of money for my ticket. Why is everyone else getting a free ticket? Obviously, it's not as simple as that, but good initiatives can sometimes go too far. So do it a little bit by all means. And hopefully if you give free tickets to young kids at one game, they'll get hooked on the mighty Reading FC and want to come back constantly in future. So it can be a good investment in the long term, but yeah, it's not necessarily quite that straightforward.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, Reading has a good history of sort of, you know, doing very well with the community. You know, we've won Family Club of the Year at the EFL Awards, I think, a number of times. And I think to be honest, I think the tickets are, you know, very, very fairly priced already. I think, you know, obviously we were the club sort of behind the whole 20s plenty idea, and I think generally our tickets are some of the cheapest in the Championship. So yeah, I think it's a good idea. You can do it for a couple of games, but I don't think you want to be doing it every single week. So say, you know, our tickets are relatively fairly priced as they are. That's it then for the mailbag. Thank you very much for all your questions. You can, of course, get in touch each week for the podcast, and thetylosend@gmail.com is the email address. Or, of course, you can send us a message or a tweet on Twitter. Time then now to catch up on all the goings-on around the club in News Bites.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tylehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetylehurstend@gmail.com.
And some fairly big news coming out of Reading potentially today is that the club may well have a new sporting director or a director of football with the Brazilian Alexandre Matos. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name, but he is set to be named in that role in the next few weeks. He's set to start in February, according to reports in Brazil, once he's received his visa to move over. He's got a very big reputation over in Brazil. He's been named best executive director in Brazil about 3 or 4 times. The last few years, he's been at clubs such as Atlético Mineiro, Cruzeiro and Palmeiras. Again, my Spanish or Brazilian is not very good, so I'm not sure that's how pronounced the names of those clubs. But he's won trophies, obviously not him personally, he's not the manager of the players, but he's had an impact on those clubs winning trophies and cups and whatnot, and clearly comes with a very big reputation in Brazil. You know, obviously not someone that anyone over here has heard of. And we've got a question from Tom Jordan as well from in the mailbag that I thought I'd bring over to this News Bites section, saying what on earth are Reading gaining by bringing an unknown Brazilian into an untitled executive post? I had hoped that Brian McDermott could have been given a role to strengthen recruitment overall is Nigel Howe still influential as chief executive? An awful lot to cover there. I think, obviously, you know, he's unknown to English football fans, but certainly Sim, you know, reading about him today again, you know, we can't, you know, take too much on his reputation because, you know, clearly Ron Gourlay had a very good reputation at Chelsea and look what he did when he came to Reading. But he certainly got a good reputation, Sim, in Brazil. You know, can he make that step into English football now?
I don't think we should rule him out. Absolutely. Of course, he's not got that direct experience of English football, but to be honest, we don't know what his level of knowledge is like at this point in time. It could very well be that he's an avid follower of the Championship from Brazil. You never know. But in his favour, is an experienced director of football. And from that point of view, in terms of his experience with clubs in Brazil, he's very well qualified. And to be fair, previously we've appointed people less experienced. Brian Tevreden had a limited success during his time with us. Nicky Hammond had a really good run with us as director of football, and he didn't have that experience when he came in. I think he was a player here before, and he kind of learned on the job essentially, and he turned out absolutely fine. So despite not having that direct experience, he still got a leg up on other candidates we could have brought in. And I don't think there's a perfect candidate we could have had. Brian McDermott's a good shout, obviously someone who knows the club inside out, but would he be suited to that kind of role as director of football? Maybe, maybe not. I think it says a lot also about the owners, about their vision for the club. Essentially, it's very, I'd say, internationalist and very ambitious. The fact that we're going out to the other side of the world and bringing in a very well-qualified, very well-established candidate and bringing them over here, it could very well be that that's with the view to expanding our global scouting networks and bringing in players over from Brazil or players from elsewhere. That could well pay off. As long as it's part of a proper, coherent long-term plan that the owners actually know what they want to do with, basically, and they've got patience and the resources to back that plan up with, I don't really see the problem.
I think Matos is going to oversee goings on at both Rosalair and Beijing Ren as well. Of course, the two other clubs that the owners have as well. Yeah, I think obviously, you know, we've been burned before with Ron Gourlay and, you know, someone with a big reputation. But I think it was important that the Reading got someone in this role. And obviously, you know, since Mark Bowen's become manager, you know, we've not had anyone in that sporting director role. Gianluca Nani was here for about 3 months last year, and obviously before him, as we mentioned, Brian Tevreden and Nicky Hammond. But it was something that me and Will spoke about in the Decade in Review series at the end of 2019, sort of looking ahead to the next decade. It was important Reading brought someone in that position to sort of, you know, coordinate recruitment. As I say, you know, he's clearly very well respected. Seems to have quite a lot of contacts. So, you know, we'll wait and see. It probably could go, you know, one of two ways. As I say, he's been very, very successful at the clubs he's been at in Brazil. But, you know, who knows? We'll have to wait and see. In terms of transfers themselves, not really that many rumours in the first few days of the window. Certainly in terms of coming in for Reading, we spoke briefly in the mailbag about where Reading potentially need to improve. But in terms of going out, a couple of rumours. Liam Moore has been linked away to West Brom. Tyler Black, we mentioned as well, of course, out of contract in the summer. He's been linked to two Turkish clubs, Trabzonspor and Ankaragücü. Again, butchered that name completely, but yeah, two Turkish clubs, a bit out of the blue, apparently after Tyler Blackett. João Virginia has returned to Everton after his underwhelming loan spell. Let's put it like that. I mean, that was almost inevitable, really. But the big one today, well, I say big, obviously, Josh Barrett has announced on Instagram that he is set to depart the club after 15 years. Obviously, been in the academy for a long time, made his debut under Brian McDermott, I think, in 2015, I want to say. And obviously, yeah, you know, made a couple of appearances this season, scored two against Plymouth in the League Cup, but not really got the opportunity since. But as I say, he has announced that he's probably going to leave. I think Berkshire Live are reporting that Bristol Rovers might be his destination. We put a poll on Twitter about this after Barrett announced it, about whether it was the right decision by Reading to let Josh Barrett go. And currently, as we're recording, 59.2% of people have said that's the right decision, with 40.8% Sexton, the wrong decision. So more right than wrong, but not overwhelming by any means. Sim, your thoughts on letting Josh Barrett go?
It's frustrating for him. I don't think he's had a proper run in the first team that perhaps would have given him a proper chance to prove himself. But he did look bright earlier on in the season, to be fair. He got two really good goals against Plymouth, really good assist for Yaku Mato on the opening day, scored against Chelsea. So he's clearly got talent. And the impression that I got from him was that he's a very, very active, very positive player in the final third. Always trying to make things happen. Got an eye for a pass, got an eye for goal as well. And he could have been a good option for us. But obviously, when you're strengthening the squad as much as we did at the end of the summer, bringing in Boye, Ejari as well, Zhao, Puskas, all those attacking players, there's not going to be many opportunities for him. And I think above everything else, he's been a victim of that. He's been a victim of there not being enough opportunities for him because Reading have bulked out their squad too much, basically. And it's frustrating for him, but hopefully he can go to another club, whether it's Bristol Rovers or anywhere else, and really nail down a starting spot. And we've seen with other Reading players, we talk about this so often, don't we? Reading Academy players not being given a proper chance here, going out to lower league clubs, getting that first team experience, those minutes they weren't going to get in the Medeski, really impressing and showing us what we can do. Tariq Fozzi seems to be doing it at the moment as well, actually. So hopefully Josh Barrett can follow in their footsteps, essentially.
I think that's the thing, really, isn't it? You know, you always want to see academy players coming into the first team, and obviously, you know, local players as well. But I think you have to look at it from the player's perspective that Josh Barrett just wants to play regular football. You know, he doesn't want to be playing 23s football anymore. He wants to be playing first team football, and you can understand that. You know, he obviously scored against Chelsea in pre-season as well, got a fantastic goal, as I say, got those two goals against Plymouth. Wasn't going to get the opportunities here. So from his point of view, I think, as you know, in terms of his career move, I think it's good for him to go out and play first team football. He's probably good enough for League One, I would say. I think he should do well at Bristol Rovers. Looking at the academy in general then, looking at sort of how the individual teams are doing of late, the 23s are playing as we're recording against West Brom. That's, I think, currently 0-0. They're currently seventh in the Premier League 2 table of the 23s, West Brom at third. So a good result for them if they can get a point or even a win away to West Brom this evening. The under-18s beat Brighton 3-1 on Saturday to move up to seventh in the under-18 Premier League table. They play Leicester, who are sixth in the table next Saturday, so a chance for them to move up a few places if they can get a win there. And on that as well, I think Thierry Nevers signed his first professional contract for Reading today, so congratulations to him. The women's team, they lost 3-1 to Chelsea the weekend. They're actually 1-0 up early on through Farrah Williams, but goalkeeper Grace Maloney was shown a straight red card a few minutes later. She clattered into Chelsea's new signing, Sam Kerr. So Reading women now sixth in WSL. They play Birmingham at Adams Park next weekend, so get down there if you can. In terms of Reading's first men's team then, of course, they play Nottingham Forest this coming weekend at home, and we'll get into previewing that one now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yep, back to league action for Reading this weekend as they host Nottingham Forest at 3 o'clock at the Mad Stad. Of course, the first of two games against Forest in 11 days. That rearranged fixture at the City Ground is in a couple of days, is in 11 days' time, as I say. Forest currently fourth in the league table after a very good recent run. I think they've won their last three games in a row. But actually, they're only 3 points clear of Millwall in the seventh, and actually only 8 points ahead of Reading in 14th, which just about sums up how close it is in the Championship at the moment. So, you know, one or two wins can sort of fire a team up the table. One or two defeats can put you right down there. But as I say, three wins in a row against Hull, Wigan and Blackburn. And that came after a five-game winless run for Forest. But, you know, they're definite promotion hopefuls sim this season. And certainly, you know, they've been in and around the top six since September time. And I think, you know, they will have aspirations of sort of staying there for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, a disappointing couple of years for the move. Obviously, had big ambitions of getting back into the Premier League, and they look a lot more positive this season. They look a lot more like they could go the distance, and perhaps it could finally be their year. But hopefully, obviously, no result for them on Saturday.
Of course, Lewis Gravan has been the hero for them, you know, throughout much of the season. In two of those three recent wins, he's got a brace against both Hull and Blackburn. 14 goals in total for Gravan this season. Only Alexander Mitrovic, Ollie Watkins and Jared Bowen have scored more goals in the championship. Of course, a former Reading player as well, someone who, you know, wasn't best used at Reading, obviously played in centre midfield at some points, played out wide at some points, you know, did start that playoff final for us. It's easy to forget. It always happens, Sim, that it's probably a former Reading player might well come back to haunt us again.
Yeah, I think he could do, actually. Reading obviously have a bit of a bad record with former players coming back to haunt us, and he could very well do the same. But on the other hand, we did manage to contain a really capable, really really effective striker in Alexander Mitrovic not that long ago on New Year's Day against Fulham. I thought the defence were really well organised. They really managed to shut him down well. And because of that, I think we've got the defensive capability to do the same on Grabban. And if we do, then could very well get another clean sheet.
Well, hopefully his afternoon goes a little bit like the last former Reading striker to come back to the Maddstow, Chris Martin, who, of course, was subbed off after about 5 minutes when Derby came just before Christmas and Scott Malone got sent off. And Chris Martin was agonisingly the player to be sacrificed by Philip Cocu and brought off. A few stats then on Nottingham Forest. They've got the third best defence in the Championship this season. Also very decent away form. They've lost just one in six on the road, which is the third best away record in the Championship. They actually have the second lowest shots on target per game average, that is 3.4. That's possibly because 44% of their shots come from outside the box, which is the second highest. They've also spent the joint lowest amount of time in the opposition third, 26%, the same as Reading. So certainly if you give Forest that space, they might well punish you. But certainly if we can contain them, you know, sort of to their own half, then we might get a bit of success. And a random stat as well, Forest have had the most offsides per game, again, average in the Championship this season at 2.4 per game. You know, potentially one way of getting around them, Sim, is playing quite a high line, it seems.
Yeah, I presume that's from players like Lewis Grabham trying to play on the final man and get in behind that way. And if we do that, obviously we're going to have to be careful with him going up against someone like Michael Morrison, who's not quite as quick as Lewis Grabham. And we could get caught out from that. Obviously got to keep on our toes.
Indeed. Looking at the Reading side then, you might expect Mark Byrne to perhaps continue with a team that has won four in a row. You're looking at Raphael in goal, Chris Gunter, Michael Morrison, Liam Moore, Tyler Blackett, Pele, Charlie Adam, John Swift, Ovi Ejaria, Yaku Mata and Lucas Jau, the team that's done ever so well in the last few weeks. We've spoken about it briefly, Sim, but is there really any need to change that side?
None at all, especially when you rested all of them for the Blackpool game. I think it'd be a little bit odd to drop any of them unnecessarily. Just keep the form going, keep the consistency going, and hopefully another bright performance. The only real thing is coming back home, having that different challenge where we're obviously going to have more of the ball. We're going to have to try and break Forest down a lot more than we would have had to do it against Fulham or against Preston. And these players are going to have to adjust to that, particularly, say, someone like Tyler Blackett, as I mentioned earlier, having probably less space to work in going forwards if he's attacking a Forest defence that's kind of more organised and more resolute at the back, basically, when being away from home themselves. But also Swift, Adam as well, they're not going to have that same level of space to work in when they're trying to break Forest down. So they need to adapt to that, and if they can't, it could be a tough afternoon for us.
Yeah, I do think we might have to change our game plan slightly. I think it might just be me, but I think part of our success in the last few games, obviously, you know, going away to, you know, very difficult places like Preston and Fulham, you know, two sides who've got two of the best home records in the Championship and almost defying the odds. You know, it was a great you know, sort of togetherness and team spirit to get those two wins over a very busy Christmas period, obviously off the back of beating QPR and Derby at home. But again, those were almost very different wins to the Fulham and Preston wins, where no one really expected us to get anything from those two games. But we fought hard, we stuck together, and got the 3 points in both. Whereas, you know, obviously coming back home to the Mad Stad against Forest, there's probably, you know, some slight expectation really now, where, you know, despite the fact that Forest are higher in the table, you know, and on good form, there'll be a lot of, you know, fans come to the Malaysia, you know, that are going to be excited to see this team and hopefully, you know, see them win. So there's going to be a certain level of pressure on them, you know, and I just hope they can deal with that. Prediction time then, Sim. I don't actually have the standings to mind, but what are you going to go for Reading against Nottingham Forest?
I'm going to go with a hard-fought 2-1 win. I don't think we're going to quite contain them enough to keep another clean sheet. Perhaps Lewis Grabham with their goal, but I do fancy us to have that creativity and quality in the final third to be able to see them off. So 2-1 to Reading.
I think I went with defeats with both the Fulham and the Preston games, so I might just go for a defeat again, just to hopefully to see if that bodes well for Reading to go on and get 3 points. But I'm going to go for a draw. I think, you know, Forest are on good form, so I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Hopefully learn a lot and then go and beat them at the City Ground. But that brings to an end episode 215 of the Tyler Stone podcast. I've been your guest host, Ollie Allen. Sim, thank you very much for joining me.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
And of course, Reading returning to league action this weekend, hopefully making it 5 wins in a row, maybe trying to return to clean sheet ways again. But Mark will be back after that Forest game to look back on that one. And then, of course, the Blackpool replay is again midweek that week. And then we've got Millwall away after that. But until then, come on, you Arts.
Funny how the crowds always leave a trail.